to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is a show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either Dave Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I talk about selected spiritual subjects in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. We all hear that we should live in the now. But what does that mean? Obviously, we should not worry about the future, rue the past. But how do we do that? People meditate and or contemplate in order to live in the now, which clearly have merit, but some people either cannot do that or don't want to or find it isn't enough. Another way to do it, which might appeal to some people, is to focus on nature. We have a tendency to live parallel lives with nature. We see it, we hear it, we smell it, but we rarely try to become one with it. It's out there and we love to look at it, but we sometimes have a certain fear of it. For some of us, nature can seem dangerous at times, but it doesn't have to be. One thing for sure about nature is that it doesn't rue the past or fear the future. Nature is always in the now, and when we are one with nature, we will be too. Our guest today is someone who has spent his life not just understanding nature, but trying to become part of it, and he is going to tell us how we can do it as well. Our guest is Tamarack Song, author of Becoming Nature. Mr. Song has spent his life studying the world's Aboriginal people, apprenticing to elders, and learning traditional hunter-gatherer skills. He has spent years alone in the woods and lived with a wolf pack. In 1987, he formed the Teaching Drum Outdoor School in the wilderness in northern Wisconsin, and he has authored several books, including Entering the Mind of the Tracker. Tamarack Song. Welcome to the show, Tamarack.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I look forward to our sharing.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Now, you spent your life living in the wilderness and studying it. Is there any overriding lesson that you've learned, which you can share with us?
Yeah, I think what you were talking about in your introduction is very important, and that's being in the now. What's happened is that we have disconnected ourselves from the means and ends of our existence when we became civilized. And I define being civilized as a disconnect from nature. Because there, in nature, there is nothing but the now. There can't be, because anything that is disjointed from the now gets quickly eliminated from the gene pool. You have to be there, you have to be present, you have to be alert, not only so that you don't get eaten, but so that you can notice what is going on around you, so that you can forage for your food, so that you can take care of your young, so that you can provide for yourself in all the various ways that we oftentimes take for granted in our civilized lives.
Yeah. I think you're right. You say to know nature is to know yourself. What do you mean by that?
Well, very simply, it's because our nature is nature. We are nature. No matter how much we think of ourselves as being distinct from nature out there, there's the city, there is the country, there it is the wilderness, there is our comfortable bedroom and living room. There is our vacation time when we go out in nature, but in essence, we have really never left nature, because everything that we have, everything that we do and see, everything that we think and feel, even the air we breathe, is nature. It may not look like it sometimes, because we have processed nature so much into plastics and all of the refined elements of our civilized lives. But still, in essence, it is nature, and if we don't believe it, just wait around long enough, and to nature it will return.
That is very true. You know, I liked what you said, and maybe you could explain it. You know, you said that that we study animals and we see them, I think, as an organ in an organism. Could you talk about that a little bit?
You bet. Because this is really interesting. Right away, our language tells us about our disconnect, because we talk about us and then we talk about animals, and we forget that we are animals. There is nothing in our DNA, there's nothing in our makeup, there is nothing in our behaviors that indicates that we are anything but animals. We are animals. I lost track of your question.
The organ in an organism.
Yeah. This is really a good concept, because when we come from ego perspective, when we are disconnected from nature, we disconnect ourselves from everything else around us. It's not just nature. There's me, and there's everything else. Well, in nature, that doesn't work, because we are truly organs within an organism. Let's take the metaphor of my body. I am comprised of my heart, my liver, my lungs, my spleen, all of these various organs. However, none of those organs are entities unto themselves. My heart cannot exist without coexistence with the lungs and liver, etc. They're all serving each other. And the same is true with us. We are organs within this greater organism of nature. I am nothing unto myself. I cannot exist for one second without my intense interaction, without my intense relationship with nature. I am an organ within this greater organ. This reflects in so much of what we do, reflects in the way we communicate, reflects in the way we meet the means and ends of our existence. Everything that we do disconnects us, and we function in this illusion that we are a separate and distinct from the rest of life, and that is simply not true.
You know, in your book, Becoming Nature, you offer 12 steps to getting more in tune with nature. You know, and let's go through them, because I thought they were really good. The first one is nature speak, which you call the first language. What is nature speak?
Boy, that's a great place to start. Of course, that's why I have it as step one.
Right.
Nature speak is the universal language. It's the language that all of life speaks. By life, I don't mean just what we consider to be sentient life, but all of life. Rocks have life. The water has life. The air has life. And this is what I learned from the elders at a very young age, telling me that these are the rock people, this is the water people, cloud people. They all have a function. They have a purpose. They have an intention. They are communicating with each other all the time. This is what I call nature speak. It's the universal language. It's not language as we know it, where you speak, I am point A and you're point B, and we're talking about point C. Well, it's not that simple in nature speak, because it's more like a web. Everything is interconnected. Everything is communicating all the time. There's this web of resonance, which is why nature works so synchronously. It's infallibly. Look at the woods. All the trees and the birds and the insects are all functioning there very harmoniously, and that's because they are all speaking to this common language.
Okay, you need to speak up a little bit. It's a little hard for me to hear you. So you're saying that every plant and every animal and every mineral, I guess, and everything out there is speaking in a certain way, not necessarily verbally, but they're speaking in some aspect, telling us about, I guess, themselves, and it's all happening simultaneously. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, let me give you an example. And how is this? Is my voice coming through more clearly now?
Yeah, a little bit better. Keep it going and keep talking loud.
Okay, I'm up closer now to the microphone. Maybe this will help.
Yep.
Let me give you an example. My writing room, where I'm sitting right now, I have a window where I'm looking out to what you might say is a natural area. My yard is full of bushes and trees and squirrels and birds. We don't mow the lawn. In fact, don't do anything to it. When a branch falls or even when a tree falls, we let it lay. Those dead trees have more life than trees. We can explore that later if we have time. But anyway, getting back to question about how nature speak works. The other day I was sitting here, looking out my window, and there was a squirrel sitting on the dead tree on the log that's laying out there. I was watching the squirrel eating a pine cone, and I saw her tail twitch, and that was a clue to me that something's up because she's nervous. Her tail is twitching. The reason she twitches her tail is that there's a predator around. Predators go for movement. Predator's going to go for her tail rather than her head. She can spare her tail much easier than she can her head. So she's there twitching her tail, and I'm wondering why. And I look around, and I bend over to look up in the adjacent tree, and a big bird had just landed. The squirrel's nervous. Well, it turns out it was just a crow, not a big deal. But the squirrel didn't know that because the squirrel responded to the silhouette of a big bird. Could have been a hawk, a predator, who likes to eat squirrels. And the squirrel was twitching her tail, and a blue jay over on the other side of the yard started to make a ruckus. Well, blue jays, you know what a ruckus they can make. And this blue jay is making a ruckus, and that is carrying on deeper into the woods, and the deer are picking it up, and the other animals, and they're all on alert to see what the danger might be. So there's this web of communication going on that started with who knows what. It did not start with the squirrel. It didn't start with the crow, because they are responding to other signs and symbols and voices that they are hearing. So there's this constant web of communication going on, which is why nature works together so well, which is why animals can survive for so long.
Let's talk about some of the characteristics of nature speak. But you know what are they?
All right. First of all, it is not a language in the way we know language. We are communicating with symbols. Every word is a symbol. We have a thought, and we choose a symbol that can most approximate our thought, and that is a word, and we use the word. And it's not precise. It's not accurate. However, when we communicate intuitively, when we communicate with impressions, when we communicate with body language, with just something we feel that's deep down in our hearts, that is precise communication. Let me give you an example. Have you ever been in a room, you're just sitting there, and all of a sudden you feel the hair on the back of your neck stand up? What's going on? You get nervous. You turn around, and there's somebody standing there staring at you. You weren't able to see him, you weren't able to hear him. Felt him. That's direct communication as opposed to symbolic communication. That's nature speak.
Okay. You say that it's instantaneous.
Yes. We're processing it all the time. And the reason it's instantaneous is that we process it in our limbic system, which is our mammalian mind. And 95 to 99% of what goes on mentally occurs in our limbic system. Only 1 to 5% is in our conscious mind. And we think, oh, we're conscious, rational beings. But no, we are limbic beings. And all of what goes on there, we are not consciously aware of. That's where the true communication is occurring.
Yeah. You see, and you also say that it's universal. All of nature speaks it, and there's no need to translate it because it's totally understandable.
Yes, even though we are not able to consciously grasp it, we feel it, we intuit it, just like the example I gave you of the hair standing up in the back of the neck. You got it. You do not have to comprehend it rationally. You got it.
Yeah. You talk about a personality of nature and you know, the various elements of the personality which lie underneath the characteristics. Do we have this personality within us too? Is it everything, us too?
Yeah, most definitely. We think that our personality is our socialization skills, the gift of gab some of us have. That is not our true personality. Our true personality is more our character. It's how we interact with people on a more intuitive level. That's our personality. And okay. This is what animals read.
Talk about some of the elements of the personality. Things like it's unexplainable. What do you mean it's unexplainable?
Well, boy, let's see. That's a broad question. I'll narrow it down to emotional honesty.
Okay.
A lot of us have feelings. We think that our feelings are, you know, the glad, sad, mad type. That is really reactive feelings. That's not our real feelings. There are only two core feelings, and that is fear, longing. Everything can be related to our fears and our longings, our desires. This is true emotion. This is where our true personality lies. If we can get bluntly honest with ourselves and get right down to what our real motivations are, it comes down to these two core feelings. When we can do that, we are truly connected, our psyches with our personalities, and we are truly communicating with another person.
Why don't we speak it? You know, if it's this precise and such, why don't we speak it?
It's part of the disconnect, I think. You know, this is just my theory, but in nature, if you look at any other animal, they're not chattering all the time like we are just to fill in the space. They're doing quite the opposite. If they are speaking verbally like we are right now, there's got to be a purpose for it. They're not just entertaining each other. Otherwise, they are silent and they are listening. Because real communication lies in listening, not speaking. Something an elder told me once. I was following around. This is a Blackfoot elder. I was following him around. I was young and in my 20s, and I had so many questions. I was constantly pestering him. Oh, I wanted to know about this and about that, all about the culture and the primitive skills and all that kind of stuff. And he turned around to me and said, "Tamrak, you know what? When you speak, you're repeating what you already know or what you think you should know. You really want to learn by listening, because then you're open. Then you're bringing an empty bowl.
Talk up a little louder.
Okay. Yeah. How is this? Is this better?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. And he said, you know, then you're bringing an empty bowl to me and to my people, and we have something to fill.
Yeah, that's a good perspective, and that's really how a lot of our communication is, isn't it? It's kind of filling up the gap of silence.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, we're oftentimes not comfortable with silence. You know, we turn on the radio or we think of something to say because we are not used to listening. We're used to being passive receptors. We're used to being filled.
You say we can learn. We can learn nature speak. How do we do that? You know, you say that there's five awarenesses that we need to develop. What are they?
Yeah, I'll list the most important ones. We can learn nature speak. It's actually an unlearning, because the ability to be attuned to nature speak has atrophied. It's going on subconsciously. But in order to be a real part of that, we need to relax ourselves and let go. We need to become, and again, it's an organ within the greater organism. There are a number of elements as to how we can do that. One is to leave the accoutrements of our culture behind. The best way to get reattuned to nature speak consciously is to go out in nature, and that can be anywhere. Bronx, even in Brooklyn, are elements of nature there. And we need to let things go. Turn off our cell phone. Better yet, just leave it behind. Leave it in the car. Don't take a dog with you out in nature, because a dog is going to disturb everything around it. A dog is civilized just as we are. And most of all, need to be quiet. Go out alone. Don't go with somebody else. Don't talk. Don't ask any questions. Just be. So that, just putting it simply, those are three things that can be done that are really to help get one, get someone attuned to nature's feet.
Okay. Now, you talk about fear of animals that isolates us as one of the things that we have to have an awareness of. And you lived with wolves for a while. Why don't you tell me about living with wolves and how you lost your fear of animals living with wolves?
Yeah, it's strange because I grew up with dogs, and when I first, I lived with a pack of wolves in my mid-20s, and I thought, well, these are just wild dogs. Well, nothing of the sort, because we've bred dogs down from wolves. You can look at dogs as incomplete wolves, and when I'll give you an example of once I came to join the pack. And I came from work, and I had all my troubles from work, you know, hassles with employees, and my marriage wasn't going well at the time. But I was going to put on a happy face because I was back out in the wilds with the wolves. And I walked in there, and I expected to just, you know, rejoin the pack, just as I always had. They saw right through me. They were not going to relate to me as this phony with this plastic face I was putting on for them. They related to me just as I was inside. And this element of honesty, this element of emotional honesty, is the core of a real relationship. This is what made all the difference for me in terms of my maturation as a young adult.
How did you first start becoming part of the pack? What did you do? Why didn't they attack you?
Because I left my ego behind. Instead of meeting them head on, instead of showing my power, my strength, I laid down on the ground and I rolled over and exposed my belly. Now, who's going to attack someone who lays down, rolls over, and plays puppy? That's exactly what I did. And that way, I was no threat to them. And I was able to establish relationship from the ground up, literally.
How did you know to do that? Did you get this guidance from the elders, or how did you know to do that?
This is just the way of nature. All of nature lives by being a shadow within a shadow, moving synchronously within greater movement. Contrary to that, it just doesn't work in nature, at least not for long. If I'm sitting on a bulldozer, I can force my will for a while, but eventually nature's going to catch up with me. So I could not bulldoze my way into that pack. I had to humble myself and allow them to get to know me and decide for themselves whether I was to be accepted or not.
And once you got accepted, then you could kind of come and go with them as you wished?
Yeah, that's the way of nature. There's just a really smooth flow, smooth interaction. The fact, when you think of a pack of wolves, you think of a group of animals that are always together, doing things together, hunting together. And that's true when they're hunting, but at other times, they're oftentimes spread out. They're off exploring on their own. Some of them are napping, some of them are eating, whatever. And it doesn't look much like a pack, just like us. When we're not at work all together, or in a social a unit doing something together, or with our family, we're off doing our own thing, right? Whatever it is, reading, watching a movie, going out for a ride in the car, or whatever we're doing, we're very autonomous beings, and the same with the wolves.
So you let them go hunt by themselves. I assume you didn't try to hunt with them.
Yeah, well, I did. I was very good at running down a deer, but we would talk and hunt mice. And it's funny because people think of wolves as these apex predators. And of course they are, and of course they hunt deer and moose. But when deer and moose aren't around, they live on mice and beaver. In our area, 18% of their diet is beaver, small animals.
That's interesting, and I like it what you said, that they kind of take it on take you on face value. They see you for what you are, And there's no pretense, especially when you're coming back from work. I really like that. And you know, and they knew there was something wrong, and they weren't having any part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Look at what we do in our culture. We are all about pretense. We try to put on some kind of a front, whether it's our facial expressions or the clothing we wear, whether it's makeup, a special haircut. We do all these sorts of things to try to create an image. That means nothing in nature. It means nothing to the wolves. I can put on or take off whatever I want, and they see me for who and how I am.
Did the wolves, did you see various emotions in the wolves?
Yeah, they're very easy to read. It's amazing. Wolves don't speak the way we do, of course, and they do have a verbal language. However, their language is really written in their expressions, very simple expressions. The way the ruff of their coat on their shoulders lays, the way they hold their tails. They have 10 different tail positions, believe it or not, and you can often see it in dogs even. Just watch how they hold their tails. It gives a clue as to how they're feeling. This is what the wolves read. The way they hold their ears, they have many different angles that they hold their ears in. The slant of their eyes, and their coats are colored in a specific way so that it exaggerates their emotional expression.
So do they try to put those emotions on, or is it just a natural thing that happens? What do you think?
Now, this is an interesting concept because animals lie. They lie like crazy. Let's use wolves as an example. When a wolf is stalking a deer, the wolf is going to just walk along as though he is not hungry at all, just going to walk along. And the wolves and the deer coexist, actually. Sometimes in the same meadow, I will see deer out there browsing, and a pack of wolves will walk by. And the deer can tell that the wolves are not hunting, so they're not alarmed. They just walk right through. I've seen some people who watch nature movies are just amazed when they see films in the tundra of the wolves interacting with the caribou, actually. You know, the wolves eat caribou. They live on caribou up there. But when they're not hunting the caribou, no. The wolves are walking right through a herd of caribou. The caribou aren't alarmed at all. Except when they're hunting, and here's they put on a mask of not caring, of just being nonchalant, indiscreet, and in order to get up close to the animal they're hunting, then all of a sudden they pounce, they go on the chase. So there's this deception going on that is we would call it lying in our culture and human culture. And this is the basis of lying. We are designed to lie, believe it or not. We think it's sinful, but we all lie. We lie every day. And we oftentimes use it in deceitful ways, of course. We want to cover something up. But in nature, lying has a place.
Yeah, how interesting. Now, you talk about learning the silent language. And then you talk about the songs, you know, and you use the birds as an example in the book. But the songs aren't the silent language. The silent language is their motions, isn't it? Their motions and their stances and such.
Now, this is a really good question, Dave, because this gets right to the core of nature speak. You know, we folks, all of us like birds, you know, and we like bird song, and we think the birds are out there singing for this and that reason, and of course they are. Everything has a reason. But that's not their real language. That's a very simple part of their language. They are out there displaying, and that's why some birds are brightly colored. You know, they're displaying visually. They're displaying through their beautiful songs. But the real communication is going on the same way that I just described with wolves. It's not just the fact that a bird is singing. Where the bird is perched. Where the bird is perched in a tree is telling me a number of things. It's telling me whether this bird has a mate. It's telling me whether this bird is feeling threatened by other male birds in the area, other territories around. It's telling me if this bird is hungry or not, or if the eggs have already hatched and the bird's mate is out the young. All of this is being told just by where the bird is perching.
So how do we learn all of this? How say somebody's, you know, is thinking, well, gee, I'd like to get to know nature a little bit and maybe spend more time out there and learn it. What are some of the methods that you would suggest people do?
Well, one is realizing that's another great question, because we can look right to ourselves, because our nature is nature. If you notice that when someone comes walking into a room, let's say it's a lecture hall, and watch this person walk in. How is the person walking in? Is the person cautious, or is the person walking in very boldly? Is the person sitting up in front, or is the person sitting in a quiet corner in the back? Is the person sitting with other people, came in with other people, or is the person more of a woman? You can read all of this just by where the person walking in and where the person is choosing to sit. And it's just the same as the bird. Which branch is the bird going to perch on? It's telling me the same thing about the bird. So I can study people to learn about birds, and I can study birds to learn about people.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now when you're learning the songs, I guess you can memorize certain songs. Now, a bird, how many different songs might a bird have, or sounds that would be different?
It depends upon the birder you talk to. Some people will say they have four different songs. Some people will say five or eight. It all depends upon where you want to slice the meat, basically, as to how many steaks you're going to have. So there are the basic several are: there's a warning call, there is a mating call, there are territorial calls, and there are come together calls that call the flock together. You could look at those four.
Okay, so it's a relatively small number. Whatever the number is, it's relatively small for virtually all animals, you think? I mean, not just birds, but wolves and so on. There's kind of a handful of verbal sounds.
Yes, it's relatively small. Now, there are nuances there, you know, just the way I'm talking. I can say love, for example. I can hiss it through my teeth, and it's not going to mean love. It's going to mean something else. Or I can say it very softly and gently, and the same word means something different. So it's the same with a bird call. Two birds can be giving the same call, but it means something slightly different because of the nuances, because of the inflection, the volume. It's the same thing there. So you're right. Verbal language of a bird is very limited and very limiting. If that's all we are studying, we're just studying birdsong.
Yeah. Now you say we ought to turn off the music the communications of a bird, for example. We need to turn off the music. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. This is very important, because we need to tune it out. If I'm going to sit out in my backyard and I was online and let's say I have a pair of red-winged blackbirds nesting in the marsh behind my house, and I sit down at the computer and I listen to all the red-winged blackbird songs so that I can memorize them and I know which song is for what, and I go out there and I listen to the songs, I am tuning into the songs, which means I'm tuning everything else out. I really want to learn about those red-winged blackbirds. If I want to develop a relationship with them, truly know them, I need to do the opposite and turn off the music, turn off the sounds, and watch and look at everything else that is going on.
Because that's where the complicated language is.
Yes.
Nope. Yeah.
Language is not And it's not only spoken by the blackbirds. It's like the example I gave before of the squirrel who is reacting to the crow, and the blue jay reacting to the squirrel, and on and on. So I need to tune into all of this symphony that's going on around me, verbal and nonverbal cues. Now I'm engaged in nature speak. Now I'm communicating.
Do you think the other species? Know the verbal songs of each of the other, whether they be birds or animals? Do you think they know those songs, that language, the verbal language?
I think they do. I don't think they know it consciously the way we do, as in studying, because they can pick up these inflections. It's the same way you and I can go to another country. We can hear somebody talk, and we won't understand the words, but we can pick up on body language, we can pick up on the intensity of the speech. You know, we can still get a feel for what's going on there. That's what goes on in nature.
Yeah. You talk about awakening the animal mind. What do you mean by that? In that, the animal mind inside us, I guess. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's the limbic process I was talking about earlier. That's our deeper mind. That's where everything is really going on. The animal mind is the seat of our long-term memories. This is where everything is processed. All of our sensory input is processed. This is where our core feelings lie. So when we awaken this animal mind, what we are actually doing is giving up control of ourselves, giving up control of the organism so that the organism can be as it is intended. So it's letting go of the ego, stepping beside our egos and just being rather than doing.
Yeah, you talk about the as part of that the experiential mind and how we need to, I guess get out of the rational mind and just try to kind of feel the experience that we're going through.
Yeah, from Zen perspective, if any of listeners out there are familiar with Zen or are into Zen practice, in Zen it's called entering the void. Here's where we just let go. We let go of our beliefs, we let go of our expectations and our preconceptions, and just fall into the void. And there are no promises there, no expectations, there's nothing to hang on to. Just open to whatever happens or does not happen.
Yeah.
This is what we need to do in nature if we are truly going to commune with nature, if we are going to become nature again.
You talk about the understanding, as part of understanding our limitations, and you use the word the time media trap. What's that?
Yeah, this is important for us because we are so media-oriented. We're using media right now. And what we do, whenever we want to know something, whenever we want to even feel something, we turn to media. We're feeling down. We turn on a happy song, a song we're familiar with. We have a night to kill. We watch a movie. We wear a watch. Or we have our cell phone with us, or smartphone, or whatever, so we can always check on the time. It's always there. Time in our cars, the radio's there. All the time, there's media. And we are caught in this loop that at any time there's a sense of unfulfilledness, we turn to media. Or any time we are feeling disjointed or disconnected, oh boy, where am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to be doing? Turn to time. This is the time media trap. We go back and forth between the two all the time. This is what controls our waking hours, even our sleeping hours, because we go to sleep by a certain time. Most all of us wake up to an alarm clock, and we shock ourselves out of our limbic state when we're dreaming. Alarm clock. And this keeps us so disjointed and so disconnected from our own natures, much less nature itself.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned is that, if you want to enter nature, you have to kind of find it. You know, and a lot of times we'll go out and we'll walk around the area where we think there should be animal and wildlife around. We won't see any. And you mentioned in the book that there are certain ways to, as you phrase it, be where the magic happens, which I thought was a great phrase. What are a couple of keys that you might mention to the listeners on how to do that?
Yeah, here are a few easy ones. Most of the activity that we enjoy in nature, that we envision, that we want to go out to partake in, happens at dawn and dusk. We can go out in midday when it's warm and sunny, but most of the animals are napping then. Oh, we'll have a few birds singing and some butterflies flying around and such. Real activity is at dawn and dusk. Because right, first of all, there's an overlap there. The nocturnal animals are coming in from their night of hunting and foraging, and the diurnal animals, the daytime animals, are waking up. So we have this interaction of the two spheres of day and night, and there's a lot of animal activity. That's why if ever you get up early and you're driving out in the country, you see a lot of deer on the road. You gotta drive very slow. Or you're out in the evening towards sunset. Again, there are a lot of deer out. You see a lot of birds flying. They're flying to their roosts, the daytime birds. And the nighttime birds are waking up. Sometimes you see bats and owls coming out. There's all this activity. So you got to be where the action's at.
Yeah. You also say that the season is something you have to pay attention to. Because there's, you know, for example, the breeding season. Where they're most interactive, I guess, and they're also least aware of other people. I thought that was good.
Oh, this is a time of intense activity. This is one reason that if anyone has hunted deer or knows somebody who hunts deer, deer hunting season is during the rut. It's during the mating season because it's then that they're moving around in the bucks, the males, have one thing in mind. I'll let you guess what that is. So they're not very sharp. They're not very alert then for anything else around them. They don't even eat at that time. They've got one idea that they want to have fulfilled. And that's why they're so easy to hunt then. That's why us civilized people who are not very attuned to the woods can have success hunting then. Whereas at any other time of the year, it's going to be very difficult. And
yeah.
So you just want to go out and see animals. This is a great time during the mating season because they're very active.
Just watch out going seeing animals during the hunting season.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You talk about energizing and attuning your senses, which I liked, and you're saying overcoming barriers, and I think two of them that you mentioned, ego and prejudice, are pretty straightforward. I like the other one, and maybe you can talk about it, having too many answers.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This is something, again, I learned from the native elders. They have a saying, be as a question. Now, they didn't say question. They said be as a question, to function as a question, to act as a question. Because in nature, there are no answers. Because as soon as what happens when we have an answer, look for something, we get an answer, and we think, oh, I've got it, and we go on to something else. Well, that does not work in the natural realm. Because as soon as we have an answer, we become vulnerable. We become lazy. We become inept. So it's always questioning, it's always being open, it's always looking, always observing. And in this way we keep growing, we keep learning. And in nature, if we are a prey species, we stay safe because we don't trust anything. I'm looking over to my right and I see a tree stump. And I assume that's a tree stump. Okay, and I don't look that way anymore. Well, that could have been a crouching cougar. Just looking like a tree stump because it was in the shadows. And I'm dead. I'm eliminated from the gene pool because I quit being as a question.
Yeah, that's really good. You have a lot of other interesting things. We clearly are running out of time here, and we did, you know, we're not going to be able to go through these. If people are interested in this, and I certainly am, learning how to become more attuned with nature, Tamarack Song's book Becoming Nature is a really interesting book to read. He's got a lot of hints as to, you know, do this, do that. And I would think that, you know, I mean, you've lived a life of this, so you've really honed the skills. But I would think, you know, taking just some of these cues that you've offered could help people big time in a short time really start understanding and communing with nature a lot more effectively. Tamrik, what are you doing? How can people find you?
You can just Google Tamrik Song and I'll come up. It's not a common name, so it's pretty easy to find me on the internet.
I have to ask you, how did you get the name Tamrik Song? Was that a natural name from your mom?
No, it's not. No, it's not my birth name. It's my adult name. In traditional cultures, you're given a name when you're born, and as you come of age at puberty, you take on another name that is more reflective of who you are and what your life journey is all about. Tamrik Song reflects my life journey. It's something that came to me in my mid-20s through what you might call a visionary experience. Tamrik Song ever since.
Yeah. Hey, we've run out of time. I really appreciate you being on the show. It was great fun, and I wish you the very best. And I encourage my listeners to, if you're interested in this, this is a real good book to read, Becoming Nature, and a real interesting guy. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Dave. It was a pleasure. It's great sharing.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of the Common Sense Spirituality Show, as well as my new show, Aspects of Spirituality, on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction. And it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.